are listening to On the Shoulders of Dwarves, a weekly podcast about role-playing games and role-playing gamers.
On the Shoulders of Dwarves.
Hello and welcome to On the Shoulders of Dwarves, a weekly podcast, well, it happens occasionally on some weeks, about role-playing games and the players who play role-playing games. My name is Eran Aviram.
My name is Uri Lifshitz. Hello!
And we are back after a short hiatus, which wasn't our intention. But now that we're back, there's no need to discuss anything else besides role-playing games, because that is the only thing, I think, Uri, you'll agree with me, that is worth talking about.
The only thing.
And in this realm of role-playing games, there's a specific subject, a specific topic that is even more worthy of talking aboutness than other topics, and that is transforming players into game masters. There's nothing nobler than that. There's nothing more important, I think, therefore, in the entire world than this.
Of course, it's very important to be a player. It's very important to be the best player that you can be.
Sure.
However, experience has taught us that if you have no game master, usually there is no game. So, having the ability to transform oneself to a game master is crucial to allow the game to continue no matter what.
Now, it's doubly important because I think a lot of players, wannabe GMs, are afraid to take this leap. It was very common in the olden days for people to basically always remain players and never transition, and GMs therefore always remaining GMs and never having the chance to be players. And I'm saying that it was used to be common because I think that these days, now that there are so many streaming services and so many people in the larger communities of role-playing games see so many different types of GMing, they can find in themselves, in their hearts, the place to say, maybe I can do it as well. And I think there are a lot of players that are actively seeking to try out their own story, to be the GM, etc. However, because it is a very different skill set, there are probably some questions that a lot of them ask, and we will try to answer all of them here and now.
Yes, I have to say, I started GMing simply because there was no one else.
Yes.
We were a gaming group. The GM had to leave town. He moved to another town. And someone had to take this mantle. Otherwise, there would be no game. So I started running games and basically never stopped since.
So let's begin.
And let's start with a simple emphasis on why this is such an important issue for us. Number one, running a game is an experience worth experiencing. It's something that you probably will never feel in any other field in the world. The ability to create a world of your own, to manipulate the joined minds of all your players into a cohesive plotline, idea, world, happening, experience, is something that you pretty much can only get from running a role-playing game. Now, that experience, besides being worth experiencing on its own, give you a chance to learn many new skills that you might never get to learn or work with as a player. From the obvious of learning new rules, some rules are meant for the GM alone. And other aspects may include understanding aspects of pacing, plot building, world building, simply managing interaction between PCs and NPCs or between the PCs themselves. These are all skills that you need to learn. And many more, like improvising whatever happening during the gaming session versus whatever it is you plan in advance. I think this is one of the scariest things for new GMs. Going, okay, I planned the session, but what if things not gonna go the way I planned? And of course, in the metagaming viewpoint, the more GMs there are, the more games there might be, therefore the more new players will probably join the game as well. And on a side note of why this is such an important issue, I believe that the experience of running a game, in all likelihood, will improve your gaming skills as a player considerably. I know it happens for me pretty much after every single time I ran a game in a new system, in a new mechanic, or with new people. I feel that every such instance improved me as a player, not just as a GM. Having said all that, still a lot of people tell me, Uri, being a GM is really scary. And I get that, because being a good GM is hard, definitely. But that's probably true regarding any worthwhile endeavor that you want to be.
Being a good whatever is hard. but just doing the thing, not necessarily.
Well, you know, as the saying goes, sucking at something is always the first step toward being kind of good at something. Yes. And I believe in that. No one starts off at level 20. We all start at level 1 and we work our way up by gaining XP. It's true about anything. Now, the most important thing to remember, any of you listener who's currently afraid of running their first game, there is nothing mystical about being a good GM. It is simply a collection of skills that you're probably not used to, as we've mentioned before. And again, no one starts off as a great GM, and there's no reason your expectation from yourself will be unrealistic. Your first session would probably be kind of mediocre, and you're going to think it really sucked. And then you're going to talk to your players, and they will say, no, it was fine.
It was excellent, even.
It may be even excellent, indeed. And every other session is going to be a little bit better, and suddenly you're going to leave a gaming session saying, that was kind of good, and one of your players will say, kind of good? We've been having an awesome time for the last 4 years. What do you mean that was kind of good? So simply take a deep breath, believe in yourself, you can do it. You can do the thing. Me and a tiny potato believes in you. Now, let's move on and talk about the ways to GM. And the most important thing to remember is that there's no one right way to GM a game. However, there's a million ways to do it wrong. And by doing it wrong, I mean not listening to your players, not being ready, not being invested, not wanting to do that. There's a million things that we're going to talk about at length in this podcast right now that you can avoid and simply have a good game. But before we get down to the simple business of how to do all this, the first and most important piece of advice, just do it. You have a cool idea for an adventure, write it down and run it. You don't have a cool idea? Fine. Buy a ready adventure from the store and run that. Again, there is no right answer. The most important thing is to find out what suits you and what you want to do so the game will actually happen.
Yeah.
Do it, do it, do it. Now you might want to start off with a short adventure. Maybe plan ahead 2-3 sessions and that's it. The advantage of preparing 2-3 sessions in advance is that if the group run ahead of what you planned for the first session, you have something prepared. Now, let's be honest. If you cared enough to listen to a podcast episode about preparing for your first GM experience, you're already in a much better shape than most. The game you'll run will be good. Roleplaying is a game built around adventure, and this is yours. Treat it as this. Of course, there are bad sessions. It happens, both to new GM and to seasoned veterans. As a friend once told me about improv show, and I'm paraphrasing on the GM side, relax. You haven't run your worst session yet, nor your best one. Now, on the topic of preparation, I would suggest to invest a lot of time and effort in planning a plot, creating characters, writing encounters, setting stats, etc., in order to make your session a success. But I would also highly recommend not to fall in love with your handiwork. Mm. Once the game starts, be ready to let things progress in their own pace. And remember, you might have planned all this, but no plans survive but no adventurers survive an encounter with the PCs. If you plan something very important that never came to be, it happens. Role-playing is a collective creation effort. It's as much about the journey as it is about the destination. If your players enjoy walking slowly along the road and looking at the sunrise rather than jogging toward the mountaintop, enjoy the fact that they're enjoying. Don't be bummed out because they aren't rushing it. You know it. At the end of the day, years later, no one will remember that NPC's name or that monster's stats. What you all remember is the laughs and tears that you all shared during the game.
I think the most important thing here is the distinction that you did between preparing and the experience. You said, yeah, prepare and everything, but then be ready to push aside anything or everything that you've created, because the current experience, laughing and remembering, and that ogre in the bushes that you didn't plan, but now it's the main part of the session or whatever, that's the important thing, because that's what we'll remember. That is what the game is all about. So there's the conflict here between how much do I need to prepare, and if, considering that I might not use all of it or even any of it during the game, what to prepare, how to prepare is, I think, probably the most important skill for new GMs, because running the game comes quite natural to all of us. If you're a GM, you probably was a player. Even if not, we all have this dramatic clock in our head, this basic understanding of pacing and drama. And if we focus on let's do fun things down the table, and we know how important it is to focus on the experience, the now, then you're probably going to do quite fine. So it's the preparation that's the big thing, because sometimes it's even a roadblock. There might be GMs that read the prepared adventure or create their own adventure and then come to the table and they want to run it like it's written, like they prepared. And whenever things stray away from it, they will maybe panic or maybe try to push back, or they will lose sight of what's important, of the now, of the coolness of this current moment. And that's because, in a way, they are committing to the thing that they prepared instead of using it as a basis. So, I would like to talk a lot about preparation. So first, let's talk a bit about specifics. How much time are you expected to invest? I think a lot of new GMs think that they need to sit down for like 4 hours before every session to prepare. Sure. I mean, as we said, there's no one right way to do it. But I would say that when you plan for the coming session, probably the following thing must happen, and they might take even maybe just a few minutes. It really depends on you. First, create NPCs. Yes, the important people. And when we say create NPCs, we have a lot of episodes about this. What's the most important thing about an NPC? How they look? What's their motivation? What's cool and interesting about them? What's the role in the story? That's basically it. And each of the things that I've just said can be a short sentence. So you can create 3 or 4 NPCs and without even yet knowing where to place them. And then when a player approaches someone and you need an NPC because this role is important, this person they decided, the players decided is important, becomes important, you make them, you pour the NPC you've created into them. The next step is finding monsters. And I say finding monsters because I think that creating monsters is insanity, and people should almost always, when they can, find a monster that looks or behaves in a way that is...
Or risky an existing one.
Exactly.
It's so much easier.
Find a monster that is close enough, change it to fit whatever you need, and go on and continue on with it, because monsters are only stat blocks that are meant to be used to convey some sort of experience, usually an interesting tactical situation when we're playing D&D or something like it. And so investing too much time in a specific monster and creating it from scratch, it requires you to understand a whole new skill set of balancing, of creating interesting things, of what is an interesting power. Let's not get into it. There's no need. Just find a cool monster.
Maybe it's worth pointing out that we're emphasizing this because it's very easy to get lost in the overachievingness
Yes.
Of starting as a new GM. I want to make this whole new world in which I want to run my adventure with brand new monster and brand new magic system and brand new action points and brand new feats and brand new whatever. Don't. we keep going back to just do it. Try to make it as easy as possible on yourself to start.
That being said, my next suggestion is about using supplements. Because especially if you come from an already established group, you might already use some supplements. Maybe something from the DM's Guild, if you're using D&D. Maybe you want to use one of the splat books that you or someone else in the group has. And that's fine. That's fine. Just please use only one or two. So it's cool, like expanding your game, using new cool rules and this strange new monster that comes from whatever. Just again, because it's important to keep your focus, don't add everything but the kitchen sink. Just add salt and pepper. That should be enough. And next adventure, next scenario, whatever, you can add something else. Lastly, interacting online. That's something that most GMs, I think, do not realize is a big time investment. You will go online. You will go to places like this podcast or other podcasts, and you will listen to episodes about things that interest you. And after the first session, problems that you've faced, and you listen to people talking about the things that they did in order to face those problems. And then you'll go to a blog somewhere, or you'll read on Twitter, or you'll watch someone streaming, and you'll find that you will be investing quite a lot of time online to improve your GM skills, probably even before your first session. That's fine. That's cool. That's excellent. Don't go too far, and do note that this is part of your preparation. It's not just something that happens in the background. You're investing time. Like with all of the other prep, keep it in check. Finally, a few points about specific systems, because time investment is really dependent on the system that you're using. D&D 5 is very simple. It has a gazillion instruction videos online. So if anything is unclear to you, if you've never run D&D 5 before, you can very easily start running D&D 5, especially if you use something like the starter set, which is, by the way, not only cheap, but also very useful. If you want to run something like Dungeon World, or if you're into Dungeon Crawl Classics, or I don't know what everything is with dungeons, you can maybe run something like Savage Worlds. Different systems demand different investment. Dungeon World demands some understanding on your part. You will be required to read the whole thing, probably, because it's a big, I don't want to say complex, but robust system that works within itself. It's important for you to know what is a move and all of the moves before you start running it, for example. While comparatively, Savage World is easy. You can just, roll. If you get a 4, then that's it. And ignore all of the additional rules because you don't need them until you ask yourself, wait, but what if I stand for a moment and aim? Can I aim? Is that an action? Does it help me? How does it help me? And then you go to situational rules and see, there's aim. You can use it like this and like this, etc., etc. That's a thing you can't do in Dungeon World. You need to understand the whole thing. So again, different systems will demand different time investment in preparing an adventure, in creating NPCs, in finding monsters, etc. Be aware of it when you go to do and run your first game, because you might want to start with something simple or with something you already know, which is the same thing because it's simple to you. I would also highly suggest using published modules. I know that a lot of people want to run their own things. I have nothing to say about that. Uri can expand if you want to add anything beyond what you've already said about that, because I don't believe in running my own thing. I don't think it's a good idea for a starting GM. I think published modules show you, the good ones, of course. You should run a good published module. Read some reviews, do some checkup on the internet. Again, it's time for your investment to find a module that is cool and good. And I think good modules already did a lot of the important job of investing some GM skills that you will absorb while you run it. Like, for example, pacing, or what should be in a scene, or how to build a story and hooks and stuff like that. All of that already exists.
what should be described literally to the player, what shouldn't, how to organize a collection of room into a coherent plot and building and make sense. Yes,
exactly.
Even if you're not going to run one of the published models, I would highly recommend simply read through a few to get the feel of it.
Finally, something that you should prepare for is the players. It really depends on how much you know them. I've already heard of people that run their first game as GMs to a group of players that they are acquaintances and they don't really know them well. And that's amazing to me. But and go for it. I mean, sure, yeah, brilliant. But if you do know the players, you should probably prepare a bit, because you might be able to guess what is fun for them. You might be able to know some of their player motivations. And so if you, for example, have a lot of players that really enjoy character interactions, and you already know that because you know them, then having a few characters, cool, interesting characters with interesting backgrounds or many layers to interact with will be awesome and will probably take a lot of the session, because the players love to do it, to engage in this thing. So just create a few, and that will be more than enough. Anything, Uri, before I continue?
No, you said it all.
Okay, then I will continue to my last step, which is about what is expected of you. This is about managing expectations, in a way, for yourself, about yourself. What is the thing that a GM needs to do? What are the things that the players and you yourself think that is on you, that you must do? And is that really the case? We already had an episode about the GM's hat and what are the roles that the GMs need to take, but just very shortly and concisely, I will go through the things here, because it's important, really important for new GMs that tend to take everything on their shoulders. They tend to think that they need to do everything, and that's not actually the case. First, it's expected for you to know the rules. If you're uneasy with this, choose a system with fewer rules, or use one of the players as an encyclopedia. Bruce, what do the rules say about this and that? Now, whatever Bruce says, the answer doesn't necessarily have to become the truth, because rules are your tools, not your boss. So whatever it is that the rules say, you then judge them to be true or merely a suggestion, and then decide what is indeed the case in the game, and you go on and continue. So you don't have to know the rules. You should probably be familiar with them, but the intricacies are not as important as you might think. You don't need to know every rule. There's, of course, a very useful tool for you to say, well, I'm not sure how this chase should work. There's probably something in the book about it, but we don't have time for this now. I will decide that you roll this and I roll this and let's continue, and we'll check this later. Because a lot of the time around the table, it isn't really important what is exactly the correct thing to do. It's more important that you actually just do something and continue on. The thing that you do should probably usually be a skill check, because it's the most basic thing in almost any system and you can just continue on.
And if not, you can simply roll behind the screen, smile to yourself, and tell the players to move on.
Sure, exactly. The second thing that is probably expected of you is to organize the session. That is, for some reason, GMs are expected to be the person that maybe even hosts at their home, but even not, then they are the people that are expected to organize the game in the first place and make sure that everyone is able to play on this day, etc. It's important that you know that this is expected of you, because otherwise there might be no one that is organizing the game. If you do not take this on you, and if no other player take it on them, and if you do not say, Bruce, you're the person in charge of organizing the session. I mean, unless there's someone in charge, it is possible that nothing will happen. So you must be the person that is either in charge or in charge of making someone else in charge.
Exactly. I will point out that we say organize the session, but at its bare bones, what we actually mean is to schedule.
Yes.
Sure. Someone who's the scheduler, who makes sure that, okay, Wednesday work for everyone. Okay, show of hands. We're all, okay, we were meeting on Wednesday here. I will send everyone a calendar appointment and remind you a day before.
The next thing that is usually expected of you is to know the adventure. In some adventures, the GM is not supposed to actually know the story. Like in All Play by the Apocalypse games, you're supposed to know some stuff, but you're not here to guide us down a path. You're here to accompany us as we choose where to go. In D&D, however, you just need to know the published adventure. It's important for you to read the whole thing. Sure, but you don't actually need to remember everything that happened so far. You can instead let the players track that. At the start of a session, during the recap, which again we have an episode on, you can say things like, okay, so what do you guys remember? Or, Bruce, what do you remember? And when you ask it like this, you're not committing to what did or did not happen. Instead of asking, do you remember the Blue Dragon? Or what do you remember about the Blue Dragon? Asking the very general, what do you remember, allows you to get some information from the players. First, what they find important, but secondly, what actually happened. If you don't remember all the things that happened, they remember for you and they will shout it at you because they think it's super important. I, for example, write very little for myself. I have a player in my party that keeps track of everything, and when I'm not sure, I ask her what happened. Even during the session. The next step that is very close to this, that is expected of you, is to know the setting, the world that the things are happening in. Like, for example, if we are in a city this and this, you are expected to know everything about this city, even down to the what sort of coinage they use. But, again, like with the rules encyclopedia, you can ask people who know the setting well, what is going on? What is the coinage here? Just tell me, and we'll go with that. Because it's not really important that you know this. It's important that you keep this true. That while when you realize or decide that something is true, you'll make sure that it remains true. That next time we're here, it's the same coinage. You're mostly here to make sure that canon is canon. Not necessarily to create this canon. Even if you're playing in a setting that is not published or not already established, you can ask the players about things around them. Like, for example, if we are in a town from where one of the characters came from, you can ask that player to add more details, to add some color and details about that town. What is interesting about this town? Ask provoking questions. What is the most dangerous thing about the mayor? Why are there wolves in the streets? Ask something cool and get some cool answers. And you didn't need to create anything yourself. You'd have the players to do it for you.
Yeah, if you remember at the beginning of this episode, we mentioned that role-playing is a collective creation effort. So use the player and their ideas. They are your most valuable resource for running your game.
The next and almost final thing that you are expected to do is what I've just mentioned, keeping everyone on the same page. But it is not true only for the canon, not only for the details and facts about the imaginary world. It's also true about the game's style. Not only what is true, but how things are expected to behave. Like, for example, are we here to have a cool pulp-like adventure where we run on the roof of the train, shooting at each other and ducking when the cave is approaching? Or is that super over the top for the type of game that we are here to play? It's up to you to keep that style. That is something that is definitely up to you. You need to make sure that the imagined landscapes in all of the players' mind, and you are a player in this respect, is as uniform as possible, that we all agree on what is true and what is possible and why. You're not necessarily the one who creates all of the imaginary details again, but you're the one who chooses and decides and then keeps what is actually true in the fiction. Finally, the one final thing that you are expected to do, and again, this is a thing that will probably indeed the case, you are expected to bridge conflicts and be the one that decides, the final arbiter of the rules, decides how things will happen according to the rules of the game. And you should probably do so fairly, obviously, and also quickly. Because most of the time, unless it's a really important detail, and these things happen, I have stopped sessions to make sure that the rules we're using are as correct and as relevant to the situation as possible because it was very important and dramatic in the game. But unless this is the case, it's usually more important to continue on to the next turn, the next scene, the next whatever, the next step in the story, than to make sure that a specific rule is invoked correctly. But it's your choice. It's your decision. That's it about this. And there's one last thing I want to talk about that is, has nothing to do with preparedness and has nothing to do with the sort of game you're running to run. And that's the apology trap. That's a thing that, Uri, I think you've started with when you've talked about the fear. I think a lot of GMs are, at the end of the game, at the end of the session, are ready to apologize for things that happen.
Not necessarily at the end. Lot of time, if you take up an extra minute to look up a rule or something, and it's like, oh, guys, I'm sorry, I haven't said, oh, damn, where did I put this? I'm so sorry, etc.
Very true. And I think it's because GMs feel that they are being judged by the players. This is, I think, maybe the most common fear. It might not even be a conscience thing. You might not even be aware of that this is a thing that you are worried about. But I think that a lot of new GMs, because they are new and not yet skilled or don't think that they are skilled, are afraid to be judged. And the truth is, and it's an actual truth, it's not something that dependent on a group. This is indeed the case that the players don't judge you. And it's not because they are angelic beings that are willing to accept your faults as a human being. No, it's because they don't care. It's because they actually, a lot of the time, play with themselves or play with the rules or play with whatever it is you put in front of them because they don't know what you've planned. They don't know what could have been. They don't know all of the things they've missed because of your decision or whatever. They have no idea of the sort of experience that might have happened instead of. They are not actually caring all that much about the ultimate experience that they might be able to achieve around this table. They probably just want to play, and they are fine with whatever it is that you're doing, as long as it's pretty cool with them. It's D&D? Sure, let's play some D&D. And whatever it is that happens during the game, as long as it's D&D, it's fine. Really, there's no need to apologize for anything.
Yep. I think this is one of the best advices I ever heard on public speaking.
Mm.
A lot of people, as they give a lecture, and at the end of the lecture, they go like, oh no, that was terrible. I haven't gotten to that part, and I wanted to talk about this and that, and I skipped like four slides in the middle, and I didn't mention the what's their name. And you look at the audience and you simply say, dude, audience didn't know about all the things that you've missed or didn't reference or skipped over. They got the lecture they got, and they're happy with it.
Yeah. Always remember you as a player, usually not really thinking a lot about the adventure. You might think about the dice. You might think about the power you want to use. You might think about the snack. A lot of the time, as a player, you're not actually thinking about, is the GM as qualified and as amazingly skilled as they should be? No. So remember that the players are probably in this same mindset as you are, the GM. The final thing that might go through your mind, oh dear listener, is a question. I have a question, you might say now, about something that you didn't talk about. There's something that troubles me. There's some sort of a problem that I think maybe an obstacle that might be in the way for the perfect session. Ask us then. Ask anyone. Ask players in the group. Ask your friends. As Uri said in the beginning, the mere fact that you are willing to listen to a podcast about being a good GM and the GM in general shows that you care. So just keep caring. Just keep asking. Just keep refining your skills through other people and asking for reviews and asking for two good things about this session, two things you would like to change about this session.
And remember, in real life, unlike D&D and many other gaming system, you can gain XP in so many different ways. Exploit them all. Asking an experienced GM for ideas, you gain XP. Listen to this podcast, you gain XP. Look for actual play on YouTube, you gain XP. All these things help you level up to your next level.
And now it's time to take the load off.
This world is carried on the shoulders of dwarves.
Woohoo!
It is a part of the show. And in this part of the show, we talk about role-playing games in our own lives. Uri, what have you been playing?
I'm going to talk about things that happened in the last few months, as we haven't recorded in a while. 2 months ago, my wife actually took the leap. She ran her first game to our group, and it was great. And she was very afraid, and you know, pretty much everything we've mentioned during this episode, but it came out very, very good. And at the end of the session, you know, you could simply tell by the fact that the player went home and started creating memes about the session and sending them to each other. It was hilarious. I'm usually the GM of the group, and I switch roles to a player, so she could be the GM for the same character of the same group. And it was so much fun. Simply sitting there and watching the other players as a fellow player and not as the GM was a very, very rewarding experience. Mm. I don't usually play in the same group that I GM. I think most people don't. So it was a very interesting experience for me as well. And I am humongously proud that she did that. It's amazing.
Brilliant. I wish I had a chance to play in this past few months, but only here and there. We are reaching the final sessions of our 50 Fathoms game, and that's a bit stressing as a GM, because I really want to tie up all of the loose ends, and we don't have a lot of them, but we do have enough. And I'm not sure we have enough sessions to tie all of them. So I've been thinking of how to tie two loose ends with the same stone. And I'm not yet sure how to do it, because a lot of them are all over the map. It's a pirate game. There's a big map. There's a huge ocean. So they can be all over the place. And they are indeed in different places. And because it's a pirate game, moving between places is a big deal. Unlike in the later seasons of Game of Thrones, we can just skip it. You can just, okay, moving across vast landscape is no longer interesting. Let's just get to the point. I can't do that. Not in this game. So I will need to probably bring some of the other forces together somehow. And that's way more thinking than I'm used to.
I was just about to say that maybe you can pull a Scott Pilgrim. You know, that all the different evil factions are united against the current
guy. I might have no other choice but to do some of that. Yes.
It's not a bad thing. I like it. I think it's give the finale a better cohesiveness. Look no further than Avenger Endgame.
Yes, for example. Yeah.
They certainly tie together a lot of loose ends there.
Beyond that, I basically finished work on Crystal Heart, and it is now entering physical production and layout of that. And I'm mid-work on City of Mist as usual, because there's a new book coming for City of Mist and I need to edit it. But beyond all of that, actually, I do have some free time. And if you are looking for an editor for your game or a copywriter or whatever, then feel free to approach me. iran.aviram@gmail.com. I would be happy to work for you if you pay well and you are good people and your work is cool. Otherwise, I might not be happy, but I might still do it, actually. So feel free to check me out. That's it.
I highly recommend working with Iran. You may not have noticed, but we're doing a lot of stuff together for a lot of years now, and it's a pleasure.
Thank you, Uri. And with that, I think it's time for us to say, what is the word? Goodbye. But in, what is the word? Hebrew, because it's our native language. Are you ready?
I am.
Leitraot!
On the Shoulders of Dwarves is shared under Creative Commons by attribution non-commercial 4. Intro and outro are by The Cliché Dio. And you can email us at show@dwarfcast.net.
On the Shoulders of Dwarves.